Paper.
Here we go. Good afternoon. It is Thursday, April 2nd, 2015. We're opening up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on General Government, and we're opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 5509, the Employment Relations Board. I don't have my glasses with me, so I'm holding it out this far.
I can
Catherine.
Hear.
Yeah, exactly. If we set it in that corner, it would be just perfect. So, Catherine, why don't you come on up? Michelle, come on up. And, John, is there anything we need to think about as we get started here?
Co-chairs and members of the subcommittee, we should be in good shape. All the information has been posted to OLIS, including public testimony. And the agency has a couple things out there, just of note, which are good references. One deals is an FAQ on their state agency assessment, which provides a history of that assessment. So anyway, thank you, co-chairs.
Perfect. All right. Welcome, Madam Chair. If you want to kickstart this off, we have an hour and 25 minutes. Run with it.
I will do that. Thank you. Okay. Good afternoon, co-chairs Smith and Steiner Hayward and members of the subcommittee. I'm Catherine Logan, board chair and agency head of the Employment Relations Board. I'm before you today to give you a brief overview of our agency, our rather difficult past, and our successes over the past couple of years. I'll then turn to what drives our budget, some changes in our revenue sources, and the two policy packages we need to continue our success in the future. I'm happy to answer any questions along the way. Oh, good, so it won't work. Right and left. Okay, instead of up and down. Okay. This is our mission. We are a dispute resolution agency. We have 13 employees, and those are divided into three groups: board and administration, hearings, and conciliation. As a side note, all but three of these people are new to our agency since March 2012, and one of those people who was there before is in a new position. We are comprised of a three-member board, all attorneys, who act as a labor appeals court. The statute requires that the selection of the members, that the governor will give due consideration to the interests of labor, management, and the public. We are selected for our knowledge in labor-management relations, labor law, and the collective bargaining process. The board is supported by a legal secretary. The appeals that are argued before us come from cases heard by three administrative law judges. They, along with a half-time elections coordinator and hearings assistant, comprise the hearings division. The administrative law judges are also all lawyers who come to us with labor relations and administrative hearings experience. The work of our elections coordinator involves petitions filed by employees or labor organizations, generally for inclusion of members in a bargaining unit. And just as a side note, the majority of our cases now come to us as card check, which was something that was implemented several years ago by the legislature. The conciliation service is headed by our state conciliator, and that service provides mediation services to help employers and labor organizations resolve numerous employer labor disputes. The conciliation service also provides training to assist parties in bargaining and in labor management committees. Along with the state conciliator, there are two full-time mediators and a half-time mediation assistant. The core of our agency revolves, frankly, around our agency office administrator, whom you'll hear more about later. This position handles budget and accounting, finance, personnel management, keeps agency statistics for all our key performance measures, and makes certain that the agency runs smoothly.
Really quick, can you, and this is for my edification, can you give me an example of how or why a case finds itself at the Employment Relations Board? Give me a couple of examples of what's ending up in your lap.
We can have a case come before us that there has been discrimination on union members based upon their union activity, their protected activity. Okay. That can be an unfair labor practice. Refusal to bargain cases, failure to provide information during the bargaining process. Those are all things that are covered under the PECBA. We also have jurisdiction over state personnel relations, and for classified employees who are not represented by a union and management service, their appeals also come to us from any personnel action, basically.
Thank you.
You're welcome. These are our long-term goals. Those are basically set by statute. Those are the things that we need to do. Our short-term goals that we've devised are what we're looking to keep our current progress moving forward to meet the needs of our parties who appear before us and to make our agency more effective. A brief review of the past. When I came on the board in March 2012, there was an outstanding budget note directive that basically told the agency to get its act together. I think that's a fair statement. We had not been meeting our performance measures, we were not getting our orders out, and I know several of you were receiving phone calls from rather irate individuals who appeared before us. We were asked to do the following, and these were the four things we were asked to do. We came before you last year with a report on all of that. We did review our administrative processes. We have done things to expedite hearings. We did conduct a review of both opinions of the ALJ and the board members to take a look at those, and how they could be shortened, how they could be more efficient, and the report on frivolous claims. We established timelines for issuing those recommended orders, and quite candidly, we established timelines for the board to get its work out. We established a general rules advisory committee to deal with the contested case rules. We involved stakeholders in the discussion of actions that have been filed and other ways the board could assist and be more proactive and productive in getting our work done. Let me take you to the present. We don't have any backlog of cases. Frankly, when I came on the board, we had two file drawers, legal file, full of cases for the board to deal with. I opened that today. There are four pending cases. One of those hasn't even been orally argued. It's just been appealed. So we have no backlog. We've reduced the timeline for processing cases. As I said, we worked with stakeholders and revised the contested case rules, but we also now have an ongoing rules advisory committee. To my knowledge, the board has not ever had that. Frankly, they were meeting today in Portland. We revised our key performance measures, which I'll address a little later, and we work with both the LFO and CFO on that.
Can you just explain to the committee in a little more detail about the rules advisory committee, what their function is?
The Rules Advisory Committee is we have 12 members, I believe, on it, of both equal labor management, representing everything from state to local government and school districts, to provide feedback for how we could handle our rules, both process procedurally, you know, what would make some sense. Right now they're dealing with mediation rules. We have some questions that are coming up about how to handle some mediation issues. So it is a group that is meeting as a group and will have proposed rules that will then be proposed to the board. They're all public meetings.
Thank you.
Certainly. One of the things we also found is that in reviewing the state assessment numbers, we found that there really should be some other folks that state assessment should have been paid for by agencies. Somewhere several years ago, it got a disconnect on the unclassified employees, and we've located about another 1,000 that starting next biennium will also be paying state assessment. And we did some revised splits for our personal services. We, for these 13 employees, the salary splits between our three revenue sources, and I'll talk about that later, were all over the board. And it just, since everybody does everything, it just didn't make sense. We wanted to make it more transparent. This currently is our key performance measures. I will not go through this, but candidly, we have more key performance measures than we have staff. And we have key performance measures for which we have no control over the time. If parties file a case and then want it to be heard a little ways down the road for whatever reason, we do that. But that time is all time that is in these key performance measures that frankly gets counted against the agency. What I think is important, however, is to take a look at this chart. From 2012 fiscal year, we did not meet 9 of our key performance measures. In 2014, we met 9 of them. We did not meet 3 of them in 2012, we met 3 of them, and we now meet the 9. The in between green, which was yellow and didn't show up, are the ones that are close to target. There are some key performance measures in this current key performance that we will never meet. One is that an ALJ order is supposed to be out 60 days after the hearing closes. That was the requirement when I worked at ERB in the mid-80s, and we each had our own assistant. It isn't going to happen when you've got three people providing cases to one person. So we have revised those, and these are the new key performance measures that we're looking at for ongoing. These more accurately assess areas of control that we have over the information, although some of them still, as you'll notice in terms of the mediation effectiveness, we're looking at how to maybe look at more mediation effective with these strike prohibited folks, because those contracts are much harder for the mediators to resolve.
Representative
because,
Comp has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. Mr. Co-Chair, thank you. I was just wondering if you have the ability or the staffing to help in mediation in other agencies throughout the state, or are the mediation people just for the employment relations?
Co-Chair Smith, Representative Comp, the mediators are available for the public service areas, the public employers and their employees.
Yes, okay, thank you.
So we have not really done any private mediation in the public, in the private sector.
Yeah, well, follow-up, Mr. Chair. If you had the staffing and the time, it might be a good revenue source.
It may be. One of the things that we are currently, Co-Chair Smith, Representative Comp, one of the things we are looking at is what might be able to be done a little bit more in terms of training in the labor relations area, particularly as we're seeing turnover in various areas, and some people have been through interest-based bargaining or they've been through labor management committees, but those people have now left and new people have them.
Right.
So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet.
So this was what drives our budget. It's our workload. And it's something over which we really don't have any control. Those cases are filed with us. Mediation requests on contracts, mediation requests on we will get some on midterm bargaining, and the cases that are filed with us on the requests, petitions for elections. But they're cyclical, and each one is a little different. We're in state bargaining right now. That's something that happens every 2 years. Shortly, we'll start getting the requests to do mediation on the state contracts. But we don't have those in the off year. But we'll have school districts, or we'll have local government. Currently, we have 36 pending cases in hearings, and in mediation, we have 16 pending as of Monday. For things that might affect our workload, for example, HB 2544, that's the midterm bargaining, but I just don't know, because there may be more requests for mediation out of that. Candidly, there may be some more requests for board work as to whether or not the subject's covered by the contract or whether it's a mandatory subject for bargaining. So I have no idea if it will actually affect, it just may. This shows our workload over the time period starting in fiscal year 08. It has dropped a little bit, but not significantly. And part of that is we're not in the tough economic times. At that point, frankly, we had lots of litigation and lots of mediation requests. As you might imagine, I mentioned that A word, attorneys, a lot. So therefore, as you can see, our personal services is rather high. That's 85% of our budget. We have three sources of revenue. Let me start at the bottom. Our other fund state assessment, that comes from a per employee charge paid by the agency, state agency, for any employee they have working during that pay period, and those are limited funds by statute to be paid on state work. The other fund fee revenue is what we get in from the fees that we have, and our fees are statutorily set. We're not asking for any fee changes, and we have three types of fees: the fees for conciliation service, fees for filing unfair labor practices, and the miscellaneous revenues, CD copies, that kind of thing. Candidly, they're a little high this time because we had numerous mediations in some very large profile cases. PSU, the Portland Public Schools, ATU TriMet, and we've had some strikes. So we've had that mediation. So our fee revenue is a bit higher than usual. As I said, we have no fee revenue suggested changes. However, we lost state assessment. due to SB 270, U of O, Oregon State University, and Portland State University quit paying state assessment as of last July, and the remaining will stop paying this July. So we need to do some transfer of funds to cover that amount. The universities will pay fees instead, but they will not be paying the state assessment.
So really quick on that, I guess I'm visiting with you and John. Do we know what that lost, I hate to use the word income, the lost assessment dollars will mean to us, to you?
Do we know?
If they're not paying that state assessment.
We need general fund to cover it, candidly. Because it is our budget is so tight, as you probably well know, that we don't have any way to absorb
That's part of the conversation we've had. Okay, Madam Co-Chair.
Just to make sure I'm right about this, the other issue is that you all do mediation for the counties and cities as well, and they don't pay assessment.
They pay mediation, excuse me.
They pay direct costs, but they don't pay your underlying base charges?
I think if I'm understanding the question, and Co-Chair Smith and Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, they do not pay a per employee charge of any kind.
Right.
When they go to mediation, there are state statutes that assess mediation costs depending upon which mediation session they are in. So those are paid for.
Right, but they don't excuse me, Co-Chair, follow up. They don't pay for your ongoing base budget.
Correct.
And there was a conversation about that a couple of years ago, and we couldn't quite figure out a solution to that problem, if I remember correctly.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, so just really quickly on that state assessment that's going to be lost due to Senate Bill 270, we're looking at under a quarter of a million, significant, but still it's about 200 to 250 right in there?
That's about right.
And do we know when the remaining universities stop making their payments, what that's going to be?
They will stop making their payment, Representative Smith, on July 1st of 15. Okay. I would have to go. I could get you the information. We get a monthly check from them and from those universities, and I would have to go back and get you that, but I can get you that information.
I just want to make sure, John, you have that information, so if you two could coordinate on that just so we know what that means to us.
If I may, Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, just to be clear, so in the agency's current service level budget is an adjustment for this expense, and it is inclusive of all the universities. So this is a one-shot cleanup that removes the assessment for those agencies and increases general fund in its place to keep the agency whole. So it's a net zero, but it's a fund shift from the fees to the general fund. From the assessment to the general fund.
And then just really quick, and I apologize.
No, that's fine.
Madam Co-Chair raised a good issue about the counties and the cities. Can you just explain that one more time so I make sure I understand? What financially do they contribute and what do they not contribute versus the services they're receiving?
They contribute, Co-Chair Smith, when they a $300 filing fee and answer fee for an unfair labor practice complaint. They contribute set amounts for mediation. It's a varying amount depending upon what session that you are in. They'll pay all of our fees. They do not, for example, pay for the time and salary of an ALJ to write the case.
And so just following up on this, what if that requires an excessive amount of time? Does it ever require an excessive amount of time?
I'm not sure what to write the order.
Correct. This is really an area that's outside my scope. So
right. I mean, some do. I mean, I can think of an ATU TriMet case that probably had 11 issues in it.
But let me ask the question more bluntly. Are we subsidizing cities and counties for this service?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll have a further conversation if that's all right.
And Co-Chair, if I may, just for a point of clarification, in addition to what the board chair has mentioned, the state general fund is in lieu of or covers the costs for the local government's piece. So the state agencies pay an assessment. There is the little bit of fee revenue comes in, and then there's the local, then there's the general fund that covers for local government the remainder. So that is the funding mix for the agency.
Okay.
And if I can just add to that, there was a, as Senator Steiner Hayward pointed out, a work, two work groups that tried to resolve this about 4 years ago and were unable to work anything out. And Senator Johnson was a member of that work group, just for information as to what occurred in the past. I was not at ERB at the time that happened.
Okay, thank you. Representative, did you have a question?
Nope, I'm good now.
You're good. Senator?
Just a comment. I was on this committee during that time, and it was a frustrating situation because it certainly seems to me if an employment relations board is a governs relations between employers and employees, and yet the employees pay no part of the cost of supporting the relations board. That it always seemed to me to be a disconnect that should be addressed. I won't say that in front of Senator Johnson because she'd probably club me.
But, and aren't you lucky she's not here right now?
Not that she disagrees with it, but she tried so hard. So
yeah, there was a valiant effort.
That would be. And sorry, Senator Whitson, I was not aware you had been on that committee too. So.
Mm-hmm. No, I wasn't on the committee. I was on this committee at the time.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Yes. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, we have approximately 1 hour.
Okay.
I just want to give you a...
Okay, and I'm just about done. Okay. So I wanted to let you know that currently we're looking at a proposed state assessment of $1.84, although I am working with Mr. Borden and Ms. Lisper on that matter to kind of do a reshoot of it to see where we are. So we've kind of talked about these proposed changes, and as I said, they all handle both state and local cases. What we do is do about a 60-40 split on this. It's about 60% local government, 40% state cases. We have two policy option packages that we want to bring to you.
Can we go back to that previous slide one more time?
Sure.
I apologize for the interruption. Is the 60-40 split that you're talking about, is that as a result of a previous negotiation or a previous agreement between the legislature and other parties?
Co-Chair Smith, that 60-40 comes from our ALJs and our mediators keep time logs, not to the minute by any way, shape, or form, but general time logs of the time they spent working on cases. And that is where that comes from, and it's historically been about that kind of spread, 60-40.
And just, you know, one of the things, after you've been around here forever, you know there's agreements that were reached, and I'm just trying to figure out, is that 60-40 the result of some agreement that was reached between parties?
I am not aware of any agreement reached, and we came up with this again this year based upon our workload.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to interrupt you. I just want to make sure
that's fine.
That.
That's fine. So let me talk about our two policy option packages. The first one there is our case management system. In light of the directives that we've been given to review our administrative processes by this committee and the legislature, we bring this forward to you. We are very paper intensive. We need to get our processes in line so that we can move forward to e-filing, which all of our constituents want us to be able to accept. But it doesn't work to have e-filing to then take the pieces of paper, photocopy them, and then pass them around the office. And that's the problem. We've talked with Nick about this, Nick USA, and we've looked at a system that we can work with them to handle this process. We provide to our LFO, and it's perfectly appropriate information, breakdowns of contested cases, state, local, everything like that. We provide him a sheet like this. 98% of it has to be manually counted. So we need to be able to get ourselves not only into the last century, but this century. When I came on board, we were still working with Word Perfect. We didn't even have Word. So we need to be able to have a case management system where we can incorporate that kind of information. We have looked at working with NIC USA. We want to be able to generate the reports without the hand counting. We looked at other systems statewide. We didn't find anything that really matched up for what we needed. Part of that is because we need to have a process that gets prepared for online fee payments. And we have talked with NIC about that for the next portion of this to be the e-filing, and we can do online fee payments where they immediately go to the appropriate office. We don't have to handle checks and manually process all that. We intend to work with DAS and with the CIO's office for both oversight and procurement of the project. The estimated cost is $45,320 per year. So this gives us a year to complete putting together all the background information. We want to do as much as we can so that NIC isn't doing that work for us, to then just have them go forward with the actual software project. This amount will also be an ongoing annual fee, and certainly if you want updates on the project, we'll be happy to provide those to you. Our other request is on our office administrator position. When I came on board, there was an individual there by the name of Leanne Wilcox, who had been there 9 years. During the time that she had been there, she had actually come on the board with it to be an office, not an office administrator, but basically the business manager handling all the administrative functions of the agency. The money was not there to do it at that point. She did those duties. And when I came on board, I looked at it and said, this position doesn't seem to be in the right classification. I was asked two different entities to take a look at it, one being DAS, one being another state agency that I'd worked with a lot on state compensation and classification. Both of them looked at that as being an upgrade by two levels, that it should be a PEMD, not a PEMB. Remember when I said that we all came in as attorneys, as board members with labor relations experience? If we had budget experience in the finance, we'd be tax practitioners, probably making a whole lot more money than we are right now. So I need you to know that to keep this agency going forward, we need someone to be able to handle all of those administrative functions in a proper classification. The agency needs the position. And I need to be able to then focus on the legal work and the legal administration that is required in the agency. That's one of the differences with us and other boards and commissions, because we really have a whole other area of work we have to do on top of all the administrative work.
So as I look at the policy option package 103, then the average salary of this business manager would be $5,128?
I would have to go back to the range.
Correctly.
It's a PEMD. I'm not sure what you're looking at.
If I may, Co-Chair.
That's step two of it.
Yeah, and I believe that's just the salary and wages. That doesn't include the other payroll expense. So those two together.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
And that's in Appendix B.
Right.
Okay.
Is that 40% OPE? Over 40% OPE?
That's...
Is that what number we use?
Co-chairs, other payroll expense varies by the classification level of the position, so it is
right.
It is a variable cost. So, but that's we could double check on that, but that sounds about right.
And so I don't want to get too personal on this, but can you share with me what the average salary of the current office administrator position is?
The
ballpark is fine.
It's three salary ranges below, as I recall, and I can get that information for you specifically. I think we are talking about the top step of the B being mid-range of the D,
okay.
If that helps.
It does. Okay, let's continue.
Okay. I think that's the information. I just want to point out that this position in the agency is the position of continuity within the agency, because board members come and go. We're not there for forever. And so we see the need to fund this. And it's interesting, I went back to some prior years of testimony and information. We had a DAS study done back in 2005 that indicated this was the type of administrative work we needed to have a person do in this agency. So it's just the work has to be done, and I really would like to pay the person for the work that has to be done.
Perfect.
I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Perfect. Senator Whitsitt.
Here's a question for Mr. Borden. Your beginning balance is 390,000, ending balance is 130, so we're already using up $260,000 of reserves. New assessment of $1.84 is a 19 cent or 11% increase. The FTE is all the same, and so it seems like we're increasing the assessment, using up our reserves. Could you explain what's going on there?
Co-chair, members of the subcommittee, Senator, as usual, you're right on track. That's exactly what's happening. We're reevaluating with the agency and the CFO's office the assessment, but essentially there is a consumption of the ending balance in that equation. So although the assessment has increased, it's not increased sufficient to ward off a drawdown of the agency's balance. So we're looking at those things. The cost increase, I think that you could maybe, the increase that you're looking at, I think could be characterized as this, and that is that the assessment for this current biennium was perhaps inordinately low because it was trying to do the exact same thing. It was consuming a large ending balance. So we're working with the agency to verify those key aspects. Is the assessment appropriate, and what will it produce a sufficient ending balance, minimal ending balance of 3 months for them to sustain the next biennium? So,
okay. Just to follow up then, with that increase in the assessment, would you anticipate that 2 years from now we're going to have another increase in assessment, or do you think this should be level us out and be sufficient?
Co-chair and members of the subcommittee, preliminary projections show that there would be a significant increase in their assessments for the out biennia, and so that's another part of the equation we're looking at to see if that should be more of an even trajectory as opposed to a steep climb for 17-19.
Thank you, Mr. Burton.
Any other questions? Johnson.
I guess this exchange just begs the question of when will the analysis be finished? You said you're working with them so that there's not a steep rise in the assessment. I presume that the two co-chairs are working with you on that, but the question of letting fees or assessments just kind of lump along for a long time and then suddenly they have this monstrous increase draws folks' attention immediately, and given who the folks are that you get the assessment from, I think there's going to be considerable angst about this.
I guess the one comment I would like to make is that we did have a very high balance in the past because no one was quite sure what was happening with the university boards and all of those kinds of things. And so Mr. Borden's statement that this one might have been set inordinately low to reduce that balance may be what has caused some of this at this point.
Okay. Mr. Chair, one other question.
Yeah.
Has the number of employees who are being assessed through the employer been significantly reduced by the separation of the Oregon University system?
Representative Smith, Senator Whitsitt, yes.
Follow up. Then you no longer provide service to the university system employees and employers?
Representative Smith, Senator Whitsitt, we do provide service. They are now provided similar to the local governments, because they are no longer a state employer. And that was done statutorily.
Thank you. That appears to be quite a shift, doesn't it?
Any other questions? Let me ask this question. Fee schedules. When is the last time those were updated? I'm looking at Appendix F.
Correct. The last major Co-Chair Smith, the last major one was when the filing fees for ERB were increased from $250 to $300, and the answer fee, and I think that was probably three sessions ago. There was also a change in the mediation fees. I don't recall when those were, but I think Senator Johnson was involved at the time that happened.
I was. I don't remember the exact date. Herb has had so many near-death experiences over the last decade that the crises sort of blend one into the next. I'm very pleased that under the current administration, Herb seems to be running like a little Swiss watch. I'm not getting a plethora of calls from all of the aggrieved parties. We raised the fees. We raised mediation. Mr. Borden was absolutely pivotal in helping to work all of this stuff out, but I don't remember the date.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for the chair? Thank you very much. Michelle, you're up.
I guess I do have one, Mr. Chair, while we're changing. If the office administrator position is not upgraded, what's the downside? I mean, other than the obvious, does the office not run? Does it begin to fall apart? Obviously, you've got an incumbent who's probably interested in seeing more remuneration, but beyond that, what happens?
Representative Smith, Senator Johnson, I think at the minimal, we're going to be paying a workout a class fee, because I don't see that the duties of budget half can be. I've tried. I tried to see who else could do our budget, quite candidly. It doesn't work. And it was the need to be able to do some of these things in-house because of the type of agency we are. And the fact that we have to be very clear that we only spend state assessment on state things and how we spend our money, we have to do that to keep out of trouble, frankly, and to have the continuity that we need. So I'll be at least minimally paying an out-of-class fee.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. Co-Chair Smith and Steiner Hayward and committee members. I'm, for the record, I'm Michelle Lisperm with the Chief Financial Office. A lot of my presentation has already been covered by Catherine here. But what I do want to bring forward to you is emerging issues for the agency. With the switch, with Senate Bill 270, we are looking at possibly the agency projecting local government caseload increase because of the switch for the universities out of state assessment. So it's not so much, I would say, numbers, but obviously, as already discussed, there's a difference in dollars that pay for that type of service, potentially. And the other, which addresses the other emerging issue, the removal of the Oregon State University system through Senate Bill 270. The agency overall in the 10-year plan for Oregon, they're a part of improving government. The bullets here talk about their streamlining efforts. One of the things in trying to streamline, though they have managed to streamline over the last few bienniums, but one of their policy package will definitely assist them with accuracy, timing, and communications with the people that they do business with. Additionally, the Board of Appeals processing time for submissions. And my stats might be a little bit off because I know this was set up for a few months ago, but on average in the last 2 years, they've gone from 129 days to 56 days as an example for improvement in abilities for government processes. As Catherine mentioned, this chart is just giving you an idea, and she's already talked about their expenditure and their history, their FTE and their positions have maintained the same. Not quite a 50-50 split between other funds and general funds. As you can see in this one with revenue history, the general fund is creeping up as a slow creep and growing. Most of it, what's being projected for 15-17 is that big shift in one of the packages because of Senate Bill 270.
I think you, Co-Chair Smith. I'm struggling with the figures. You go back a slide, please. The assessments on the top boxes there are continuing to increase. assessment revenue, and yet you lost how many OUS employees assessment? I mean, how does that work?
Co-chair, Senator Whitsitt, the orange or yellow boxes are combined other funds. It's not just purely assessment dollars. This graph is just splitting out general fund and other funds, which would include both the fees for local government and the state assessment dollars combined. I do not have a chart here that splits it out, but I can get back with you on your specific.
I would appreciate that, because obviously it would seem obvious that the assessment, if you lose several thousand OUS employees, that the assessment is going to go down. And if that box is continuing to increase in size, somebody's paying the difference. I think we should find out who. Thank you.
Co-Chair Smith, may I respond?
Yeah, please.
Senator Whitsitt, one of the things that I indicated was that we've been very high this year on fee revenue due to the number of mediation cases that have been involved with the Portland Public Schools, ATU TriMet, the Medford strike, the GTF strike, and Portland State. Our fee revenue is considerably higher than it's been in the past, and I think that accounts for some of that difference.
Yes, well then, is that increase in fee revenue something that's going to be sustainable, or is there a one-time phenomenon?
I'm assuming at this point, Senator Whitsitt, it's a one-time phenomenon, but it's labor relations, so one doesn't quite know what will come before us. It is clearly, Senator Whitsitt, inconsistent with what has happened in the past.
Thank you.
Does an organization like TriMet, are they under the same structure as a county or a city in terms of subsidization from the state of Oregon?
Representative Smith, yes, they are. It is only the state employers that are under the state assessment.
And just before we move on, I've just been around here so long. I'm trying to figure out where the agreement was reached, or what was the rationale for the state of Oregon to say we will carry that burden on our shoulders rather than share it among all the partners. And I guess I'm not looking for an answer, but if you come across that, or I'd be very interested in knowing.
I'll take a look, Representative Smith.
During the public hearing portion of this, if anyone knows that answer, I'd love to have you share that. Okay. Michelle, why don't we keep going there?
Yeah, not a problem. So to continue, as Catherine had mentioned, the shift in revenue, the increase for 15-17, as I mentioned, most of that is driven by Senate Bill 270 as far as the increase from LAB and now. And one of the investments that I'll mention about that was brought up earlier, and Catherine went into detail, the governor's budget does look at investments for the reclassification of their office administrator based on the need indicated. The case management system, which will not only help them and their stakeholder partners, but again, this is streamlining efforts for improving government. And then the other fund shift to general fund, which was mentioned, which is an estimated figure, which is $226,000 is the estimated figure for that shift from assessments to general fund dollars based on Senate Bill 270.
That helps tremendously.
And that's kind of all I had for my portion of the presentation.
Do we have any questions? Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, so we're gonna move to the public testimony portion of public hearing. Joe and Bob, do you guys wanna come on up? Welcome.
Where do you want me to go first? I'll go first, okay. Co Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Smith, thank you very much. Members of the committee, my name is Joe Basler. I work for Oregon AFSCME. I represent about 24,000 members in the state, and the vast majority are public employees. And we're very supportive of ERB. We don't always win, but we always like it. In the grand scheme of things. I don't have a lot to add. I just think we want to make sure that the progress that's been made with ERB, and it has been quite a bit of progress. I was a younger lobbyist sitting in the back of the room while Bob and Senator Johnson talked about trying to figure out how to fix ERB, and it was very informative. Especially I didn't understand what was going on for the first 3-4 meetings.
Did we?
Yeah. but I think the administrative assistant moving to a principal is really important to keep that progress going and making it a they're already doing the work, and eventually you're going to want to have that position set up and ready to go when it has to be replaced at some point. Hopefully not soon, but maybe. That's all I really have to add, and I just want to say thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Co-chairs, committee members, for the record, my name is Bob Livingston. I represent the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And in my other job, I'm also an active firefighter. And if I could, I'd like to maybe provide to you 4 points as it relates to this budget. First, I think, you know, a huge amount of appreciation goes out to Chair Logan and the entire agency. If you were to spin back the dial perhaps 2 years ago or maybe a little bit farther than that, as noted by Senator Johnson, this agency was in difficult times. Fortunately, under her leadership and you know, with some assistance from this body, for those that were late to the hearing due to busy schedules, clearly by the fact that they have no outstanding cases that are late or any of that is unbelievably amazing. And, you know, I think a huge round of appreciation for that in short order is notable. Second point, specifically to the e-file and the POP 3 that's in there, some of the things that I think over the years, and I've fortunately had the opportunity to be here now 20 years inside the building, one of the things that I've always been a big advocate is, and I think the chair spoke to this, is that I think that this body needs to recognize that the three board members that are selected with a deference from the governor towards one person that has management experience, one person that has labor experience, one person that can be a neutral. All of these, for the most part, while it's not a criteria, they're practicing attorneys that really understand the PECPA statutes, understand those things. They're not business managers. They're not like, you know, each school district or even other agencies within inside state that have people that really understand, one, how to navigate the legislative and the budget process, two, how to navigate DAS and contract things. And I guess what I could say is, you know, while all of you are very experienced, could you imagine how difficult it may be for the legislature if they didn't have people like LFO staff to help navigate that? In essence, that's really what the board chair has to do, because they are the ones that are responsible for developing the budgets. And so really, they're practitioners of understanding how labor law works. I think that would not only perhaps make them more efficient, I think we are very fortunate right now that the chair does have that particular skill set that can do that. But keep in mind that these are, you know, you don't always have these individuals. They do come and go. And perhaps in the future, I think it would be one of those things that perhaps would keep us from getting back into the danger zone, if you will, for ERB. So I think that's an important element that, you know, I think you should have consideration for as you move forward. The third point that I would like to make is specific to fees. You know, I think it was, I believe, specific to mediation. I want to say it was around 2011. There was a work group. We all recognized that, you know, because of this, there was revenue issues. One of the things that we all agreed upon, both labor and management, was to increase the fees. Are the fees exorbitant? Perhaps not. One thing that I can suggest to you, though, particularly from a labor standpoint, these aren't nothing fees. For example, as a member of a non-strikeable unit, one of the criteria under the PECPA law, if you can't reach a labor agreement with the employers, it is required that you go to mediation. Mediation right now, it's the initial day of it is $1,000. I believe it's a $500 the next 2 or 3 days. Sometimes you can have a 2 or 3 day session. My point of that is those costs are split equally between the employer and the labor organization. And it doesn't matter on size. And one of the things that I would be remiss is we have a lot of small locals, you know, particularly as we go east of the mountains. You can have a local that's 4 or 5 firefighters, maybe 4 or 5 police officers. Well, a $500 or a 2 day mediation session, that's $1,000. There's no parent organization the way we're structured, and many in labor. Those are local autonomous agencies that they have to come up with their own monies in order to do that. And again, it's a requirement. So I think that as we deliberate and as we try to address those, that those can be expensive for those particularly smaller locals. And so I think it's important to point that out. The fourth thing, this is an area where I want to be very careful because I'm not interested in bringing up the bruises and scars from the process before. But let me suggest to you perhaps a little bit of the historical perspective on the 60-40 split. Certainly, I haven't done the research on this. This is more anecdotal on the 20-plus years and, you know, listening to people like Pat West and other people that were involved in this. Let me provide this to you if I can. The PECPA statute's been around since 1973. It was born out of this body along with the executive branch to basically, as the mission statement that was previously, to really have harmonious relationships, labor management relations for the citizens of Oregon as it relates to government and labor management strife. My understanding of that is I think if you were to look at this as government as a whole, like I really do believe that most people look at government, they don't say, oh, that's the state, that's local government, that's a special district, those kind of things. They look at it as government. And I think the genesis behind that is that as part of that responsibility, as the parent organization, if you will, of all local governments and special districts, I think that's historically, that was kind of a philosophical debate that, hey, you know, this is ownership by the state and to do those. Second to that, I think if you were to look, and we did do this, and again, I don't want to rehash those difficult discussions that we had. If you were to look to other states and that, it is by far the most common way of funding the system is from state government, and most, if not all states, simply do fund that out of it. It's not assessed at the local level. And let me give you maybe one other perspective on that. And it's maybe outside the scope of this, but again, my experience, and I want to be careful here, is these are my personal opinions, but I will say I am a Salem firefighter for 22 years now. These are my own opinions and the opinions of the Oregon State firefighters. But let me give you an example of government function. We come to this building multiple times for medical emergencies. We certainly were here when the governor's office caught on fire. Over the years, I've had multiple responses to all the state buildings in this town. The reality of it is those are not on the property tax rolls. And so my point to that is local government does share with state government to provide essential services and all that. So as you deliberate and discuss those, I would suggest to you that there are trade-offs between the varying levels of government that need to be factored in if you are going to go a different policy direction. And I would argue and contend that particularly some local governments do more than their fair share to assist the larger parent known as the state of Oregon. With that, Mr. Chair, would certainly hope that you could consider the POPs that the ERB has provided for you. And again, we're very pleased with the work that the ERB agency has done. With that, be happy to take any questions.
Awesome. Excellent. Senator Whitson.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, this essential agency appears to be headed for a fiscal cliff in 1719. So I was wondering, will the public employees be willing to help pay for this essential service in the future with payroll assessments?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Whitsitt, I'm not going to, you know, get into a hypothetical with you. We do have a philosophical difference and a fundamental issue in the fact that we think that all employees should have the right to their day in court. Herb is our right into that court. Clearly, I think what you have seen in today's budget focus is that there is simply a cost shift, and instead of coming from an assessment, it's now coming out of the general fund. If you look at those as total dollars, I think that's really what it is. And so I hope that's responsive to your question. But clearly,
I take that, Mr. Livingston, as a no, but thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'd ask to really step off and go another to a different branch on this discussion and share some comments about yesterday's fire at Albany High School. Can I?
Please.
Is that all right?
Please. Yeah.
Mr. Livingston had a lengthy conversation with Representative Olson today, and he still is in awe at the response, the work, the effort, and the containment of how well the firemen in Albany did yesterday. And I'm sure he'll probably write his own notes of thanks. But and I share with him that I have a daughter that's a firefighter, and I don't know how they do it, but they are brothers when they're out there fighting a fire, and they're there to support our communities. Doesn't matter where the building's located. So thank you.
Co-Chair Smith, Representative Comp, I'll make sure to relay that to the Albany firefighters. And certainly coming from a law enforcement officer, that means a lot, certainly as that fund, and while we protect one another, there's always that collegial fund that firefighters and police officers have. So that'll mean a lot coming from Lieutenant Olson.
Yeah.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, in Mr. Livingston's comments, either in the second or third section, there was a suggestion about expertise that's extremely useful that isn't necessarily built in a structural way into how the board works. And I believe that what I get from that is there might be a policy issue for us to discuss about how could we add this expertise in a more either structurally or in some other way that guarantees that all the good stuff that is happening can continue to happen. So I'm wondering how we could arrange to have that as a separate conversation, just to follow up and not let this idea be forgotten.
I think we need to note that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the panel? Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Let's see here. Sarah, Scott, both of you.
Two Sarahs.
Is there two Sarahs? Oh, hold on here.
Oh, just Sarah.
Did I miss something here? Yeah, you're Sarah, right?
I thought you were saying Scott is in Sarah Scott, the last name. It's not uncommon to find more than one Sarah in a room.
Oh, Scott's right. Have that same. You're problem. Up, Sarah. And Scott, then you're up.
Right. Thank you. Confusing.
You threw me.
Co-Chair Steiner, Hayward, and Smith, and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Drescher. I am an attorney with Tedesco Law Group. We are a law firm in Portland, Oregon, and we represent labor unions across the state of Oregon. Our clients include the Oregon School Employees Association, the Oregon State Firefighters Council, and many local firefighter unions, many of the law enforcement unions, including the Portland Police Association, Multnomah County Deputy Sheriffs, Clackamas County Sheriffs, and the engineering employees of the state of Oregon, the Portland Professional Employees Association. I could go on. My point is that the attorneys in our law firm practice regularly before the Oregon Employment Relations Board. We consistently have at least one case going before the board. And we handle unfair labor practices, union representation petitions, and we use the board's mediation services to resolve our labor disputes. The Employment Relations Board is one of the true success stories among Oregon administrative agencies. Under the leadership of Chair Logan, the board has eliminated its backlog of cases and now consistently processes cases and issues decisions in a timely manner. And I can tell you, as a frequent user of the board, this is a noticeable improvement, and it's happened in just two short years. Attorneys from employers and unions alike will attest that the board's improved efficiency has led to speedier resolution of labor disputes. And quick resolution of labor disputes is not only good for those immediate parties involved, but it's good for the communities in which these labor disputes arise. It's good for Oregon taxpayers, and it's just good policy. Maintaining that efficiency that the board has worked so hard to achieve is going to be essential to continuing labor peace in Oregon. One thing that was mentioned earlier that would continue to increase that efficiency is for the board and for those of us who use the board services to use an electronic case management system with the ability to file things and serve things electronically. Currently, the Oregon appellate courts use that electronic filing system to reduce the time and expense of paper filings. Just this morning, I had a motion in an appellate case dropped on me at 9 a.m., and I was able to file a response to that motion before coming down to testify today without ever printing anything out. I can't do that with the Oregon Employment Relations Board. It takes me twice as long, and it costs more, and it's more timely because you have to print everything out, and you have to file things in the old-fashioned way. This is an essential step to maximize efficiency and to reduce unnecessary costs, and that's both for the board, but also for the public employers and unions who use the board services. Unions and employers, they don't always agree on much. In fact, I would say the lawyers for unions and management don't often agree on anything. We practice in an area of law that is at times divisive and it's contentious. But I think you could ask lawyers on either side, and they're going to agree that a strong, well-funded employment relations board is absolutely necessary to provide labor peace in Oregon's community. The board is our dispute resolution process. We don't use the courts. If we did, there would be a court clock. But the board hasn't worked perfectly in the past. Now it is working better than it has ever worked before, and it's noticeable. Senate Bill 5509 will allow the board to continue to improve, to continue that progress, and to maintain this efficiency that has had an impact both with labor unions, employers, and our communities by resolving labor strife quickly and efficiently. I encourage you to pass Senate Bill 5509. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. We are a management interest. City labor attorneys practice regularly in front of ERB, and we are here to support the ERB budget and the POPs 1 and 3. We believe that adding the electronic efficiency is a simple modernization method. Other agencies are pursuing similar systems, and this is appropriate. Additionally, the realignment of the admin position into a principal position is appropriate to reflect the duties and to ensure that we have a person in that position that has the appropriate knowledge and skills to manage a state agency. I would also add that had I'd been asked to support the ERB budget 4 years ago, I would have had a remarkably different response, and probably one that wouldn't be appropriate for testimony. This really is a success story of an agency. We have not, prior to this, we were seeing reinstatement orders coming in almost 2 years after the fact. We don't see that now. The members of the committee, as Senator Johnson pointed out, aren't getting the calls complaining about the agency. I'm not getting those calls from my members either. I think they should be commended for the success they've made. I will also add that I was part of that work group that occurred 4 years ago, and I have adjusted my calendars, so I have no further meetings because I assumed you might have a few questions and I would be up here longer than I anticipated. So please, with that, I'm eager for your questions.
Senator Johnson.
I would just like to add both Mr. Livingston and Mr. Winkles were part of that work group when we were locked in the hermetically sealed room trying to figure out how to resuscitate, the Heimlich maneuver being performed on ERB. And for the new members, I just don't think you can appreciate the turnaround. And I want to add mine to the bouquet toss to the board chair and the folks at HERB for the work that they're doing. This really is transformational. It's a different agency. And to have Mr. Winkle sitting up here saying good things about HERB, I felt the earth move briefly.
Is that what that shaking was?
Yeah, that's what that shaking was. So.
I didn't know you were so powerful, Mr. Winkle.
That's a song.
All righty. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. I just wanted the tutorial, Sarah. ERB is an administrative process. Is that correct?
Correct.
So it is appealable to which court then?
The Oregon Court of Appeals.
Oregon Court of Appeals. And is that's a de novo appeal, or is that just what the board puts out?
It's not de novo. The scope of review is limited by what is available by statute for administrative appeals. Typically, it's abuse of discretion, errors of law.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing in that process is there full discovery?
No, it's the record that was before the Employment Relations Board.
No, I mean within the Employment Relations Board, in that proceeding, in that administrative proceeding, is there full discovery in there?
Well, I want to be careful not to use the word discovery because it has a different meaning in civil litigation. What you have is the right to information under the Public Employees Collective Bargaining Act, but that information has to be pertinent to whatever the matter is. So it has to be relevant to the unfair labor practice dispute that's before the board. And oftentimes those are questions that have to go to the board of, is this information pertinent to that particular dispute?
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Senator Johnson.
One other question. You present yourself as a target of opportunity. We gave the Court of Appeals three new positions. Mm-hmm. Are you finding cases moving through any that are up on appeal? Are you finding them moving through the Court of Appeal more expeditiously?
It's funny you should ask that. The response I filed today was in a case that I filed in 2011. And it's still pending. And the motion I was responding to was by the League of Oregon Cities that filed an amicus brief in that case today, and I said it was untimely because that case has been pending for so many years. Now, maybe there is new appeals are moving faster, and maybe I simply have a very complex case, and I will admit it is complex, but I haven't experienced this newfound efficiency yet.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Catherine, I have one last question, if it'd be possible for you to come up.
Certainly.
Because of the nature of the work, we're dealing with two parties quite often in contentious situations. Is there any type, and I don't know how else to phrase this, is there any type of scorecard to show management victory, labor victory, common ground victory among the cases? And I don't know how else to ask that question.
Representative Smith, I'm not sure what common ground victory would be because when it comes to us as a case, yes, there are many cases that are settled prior to them reaching the board level by either the administrative law judges or particularly in state cases, being able to refer those to the mediators to be resolved. We have a little bit of trouble referring local cases to the mediators because they don't want to pay the additional cost. We can certainly give you, you know, what cases the board has made a decision on that supports, you know, the management, that supports the union. We can do that. Our assessment has been it's been relatively even. Most cases, however, are filed by the unions. They're not filed by employers. So I don't have the concomitant.
You know, it's pretty hard to survey because if I lose, I'm not going to be happy. You know, so you can't do a satisfaction survey.
No, but I can give you the numbers of, say, the orders that we've issued in the past year, what ones have found the unions to prevail and what ones have found the employers.
And I guess I don't
prevail.
Need that. I guess I just want your assessment on it. Has it been relatively down the middle?
My assessment, well, the difficulty I'm having answering that, Representative Smith, is that all three of us are working very hard to be neutrals and to base our decisions upon the law. So to us, it really, we aren't looking at who the winning or losing party is. My initial assessment would be that it's pretty even, but I could go back to to the notes and find it to be different. I mean, that may be what's out there. I write some dissents. The labor member, Mr. Wyand, writes dissents. I mean, we don't even always agree on the board level. But we're trying very hard to be neutral.
Is it impartial? Is it fair? Would both sides be able to say, yeah, you know, we're getting a fair shake?
I believe you would get that. And I think you would get that. That has not always been the case. I think you would hear that now.
Interesting. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Just your answer reassures me that you are attempting to serve a just outcome, that you are not approaching it with a bias. Answer brought me a great deal of comfort. And I believe, from my opinion, it was the appropriate answer.
Right.
We try to come in. I mean, we have different backgrounds and different experience, and so we may look at a situation differently, but we all want to base it on what the law is that has been done by the legislature.
Got it. Thank you. Senator Whitson.
Just one other question, Ms. Logan. When you send a case to mediation, could you say the same down the middle response from mediation? I mean, do you accept the mediation, and particularly in when you send mediation to when you send a case to mediation that has to do with a organization that's not allowed to strike? Do you think the results come down the middle then?
Representative Smith, Senator Whitsitt, I'm hearing multiple questions in that. So let me start out by saying there are contract cases for resolution of contracts, and for the folks who can't strike, we don't get as many resolutions of those. More of those go to interest arbitration. For the unfair labor practice or state personnel matters that may be going to a mediator, most of the times those resolve, and understand the parties have to say this is the answer. The answer is not given by a mediator. So it's not adjudicated by a mediator. And if the parties can't agree on the answer, then it just goes back in as a case to be heard as an unfair labor practice or a state personnel relations law.
And thank you.
Does
for that
answer?
That's reassuring as well. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, that helps tremendously. Any other questions, colleagues? Any other thoughts? Madam Co-Chair, we good? John, Julie, we're good? All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, we're going to adjourn. And have a great afternoon.
I'm coming up to your place.
And have a great afternoon.
I'm coming up to your